DiscerningHearts.com presents a very special conversation entitled Prayer in This Present Moment with Deacon James Keating. Deacon Keating is a professor of spiritual theology at Kenrick Lennon Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri. For over a decade and a half, he also served as director of theological formation at the Institute for Priestly Formation, located at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. He has given more than 400 workshops on moral theology and spirituality and continues to regularly conduct retreats. He is also author of numerous books, including Remain in Me, Heart of the Diaconate, and Listening for Truth. Prayer in This Present Moment with Deacon James Keating. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Deacon Keating, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
It is a joy for me to have conversations with you about prayer. It has been for so many years, over a decade or more, actually. It's quite a gift when you have someone in your life, isn't it, who you feel very comfortable talking about spiritual things.
Right. And it's the whole point of the church, right, is to at least find some people like that, that we can truly share our faith with at a level that is substantive and not just fleeting or superficial. So that's why, again, the importance of the ministry of discerning hearts, so that the church actually has a voice to proclaim the substance of the interior life, and that the church also has a means to hear that substance of the interior life. And that's why discerning hearts is a blessing to the church.
So many years ago, when Discerning Hearts first started, you've always counseled me to listen deeply and to really be responsive to that, try to tune out the noise of so much of what else is going on in the world and to listen. And that, I think, that was great advice for me, but I think that is wise advice for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah, always you want to listen at that level that analogically, in marriage counseling, it's always at that you're listening at the level of the heart. You're listening at the level of what's really being said, not the words that are coming out. There's a certain crisis today. I would almost call it like the triumph of the journalistic. And the triumph of the journalistic, even in theology, even in ecclesiology. All the news outlets that call themselves Catholic, the media, very superficial, mimicking the sound bites of CNN or some other popular secular world. And it's all over the place. It's almost too much of it. And so something pops up on your email in the morning and you can quickly delete it because it's just going to be the superficial flotsam and jetsam of the passing moment. And we have to probably have less voices speaking. And I'm quite conscious that I'm a voice speaking now, but if you want to turn me off right now, go right ahead. Because we probably need less voices and just more quality. As we go into a smaller church and a church that Pope Francis characterizes as entering a new epoch, a new age, we probably need fewer voices. And that might shock people and say, oh no, you're trying to solidify power in the hands of the few or something like that. But no, it's just a recognition that there's just a lot of garbage out there, and there's a lot of unnecessary talking, and there's a lot of unnecessary writing. And you could read Ratzinger until you're dead. Why do you need more books than Ratzinger? Mm-hmm. Why do you need to read books by anybody else other than, let's say, Donald Haggerty? People who have really suffered prayer. Why would you want to understand liturgy from anyone else other than David Fagerberg from University of Notre Dame, for example? Because there's just a few voices that are refreshing. A few voices that are actually carrying tradition and depth and truth from what they themselves have suffered in their own personal encounter with God. And so the title of your your media is discerning hearts, and so we have to be more discerning. And a lot of the voices in the popular Catholic press, so to speak, should probably fold up and leave. Maybe like with this COVID virus, we're finding some restaurants will never open again. Maybe there should be fewer voices filling up the airwaves too, because they're just not carrying food. They're carrying fast food. They're not carrying the gourmet, if you will, of the best food of the tradition. And so people have said, this is boring. And so they turn away from the church. Unless we start eating the best of bread and drinking the best of wine, there's no point to eating and drinking. And this is not some type of ecclesiastical or theological snobbery. It's a recognition of nutrients, the nutrients that the soul needs. And the soul needs, you know, von Balthasar, and the soul needs Ratzinger, and the soul needs Donald Haggerty and David Fackerberg. The soul doesn't need a lot of fluff. And so I'd like to see not only the church get smaller, but I'd like to see fewer voices.
The voices that are reaching the heart of so many through that deep listening are themselves ministers of communion, aren't they? And I'm not necessarily talking about the ecclesial role. I'm talking about those who have experienced Christ within themselves and then are able to give that back. So it's not even their thoughts or their plan. It's something much deeper than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the communion that they are suffering themselves. All their struggles to remain disciples, not their desire to sell a product. What you want to listen for in the best of the best is that they are sharing the fruit of their suffering, Holy Communion. They're not sharing their next product. And that's the key discernment. And that's where the real nutrition is found.
Mm. You know, Deacon Keating, for many who are on the spiritual journey, they'll encounter those who are, and I'm going to put this in quotes, teachers. They're not necessarily those communion givers, but there are teachers who are trying to break open spiritual realities of so many different charisms, can we say? And there comes with that sometimes rules, a rule for, you know, this is Benedictine prayer and this is Carmelite prayer and this is how you pray if you're a Franciscan and so on. And those parameters in and of themselves are a good thing in many ways. That's why they've come down to us. But sometimes they're taught in a very structured way that can be very harmful to particular souls, can't they?
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the scrupulous soul is harmed by that type of thing. They're always feeling they never actually pray, like they're going to go to the grave thinking, well, I've never prayed because every morning I missed level A and level B and point C and point D. And can you imagine living a marriage that way? It would be horrible. The modus operandi for what I would call Catholic prayer is the mysteries of the sacraments. And then even more particular, obviously, the mystery of the Eucharist. And then flowing from that would be the mystery of the nuptial union. And that's basically the Catholic model, because prayer is about intimacy. It's about self-giving and intimacy. It's about surrender and listening. Those are all nuptial experiences. And so the Franciscans only developed an understanding of prayer in their own particular way through their sublimation of celibacy. They had erotic desires, and the erotic desires had to go to the origin of all love itself, which is the Trinity. And so they developed a way of having erotic desires move to the Trinity in what one might call a Franciscan way. when a man and a woman get married, they just simply move to each other. They don't map out a way. I mean, you might say, well, the way that Bob and Sarah talk to each other, couldn't that be constituted as a way because they talk differently than Sue and Dave? I guess you could call it a way, but for a couple, it's just wanting to be with each other. And we overanalyze prayer so much. Part of the problem, you know, of course, is always people like me who get a doctorate and then spend their life teaching or hold up somewhere. And then you got to make a living putting words out or trying to understand things in such a way that you have to reconfigure them and make them sound new so that our publisher will want to publish them. And that whole thing is kind of messy because people keep thinking that, oh, here's a new way of doing something because Dr. So-and-so or Father So-and-so put it out today. But no, that's not true. People are just sitting at desks trying to figure out how to use their time because they have tenure or someone's given them a salary. And you don't necessarily need these gurus, these teachers. You need to go to daily mass. And if you're married, you need to go to daily mass sometimes with someone you love. And if that person is working, then you need to make a visit to the Blessed Sacrament with that someone you love. And you need to be in the presence of love itself and just allow yourself to be loved. The problem with our making prayer so complex is that we lose an understanding of its essence as suffering the love of God in such a way that we don't fidget our way away from that love. The hardest thing about prayer is actually just letting him be who he is in your presence and suffering that as we want to do other things. Well, I'd rather write it in a journal. Maybe I should read the scripture now. Maybe I should make some resolutions for today. No, you just be loved. Just be loved. It'd be like a child trying to squirm out of his mother's arms, and where he really needs to be is just there, just to be loved. Stay with your mother. You need to be touched. You need to be held. You need to be reassured. You need to be told that you're important. And the Trinity is trying to do that every day in contexts of silence so that we can have that love emerge out of that silence and affect us. And so methodology, sure, we're on the planet Earth. I guess we need a way to do this. But endless repetition or endless exploration into different schools of thought and ways of allowing ourselves to suffer this love, just check off the box if it's helpful. If it's not helpful, move on and stay with the simple things that Jesus has given us for salvation. If the church door is unlocked, go in and sit there. If there's a priest in your town who says daily mass, go a couple times during the week and let yourself be loved by Jesus. Don't make it any more complex.
We'll continue our conversation with Deacon James Keating in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app in which you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Deacon James Keating, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more are found on the Discerning Hearts free app. Did you also know that you can stream Discerning Hearts programming on numerous streaming platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and so many more? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has the YouTube page? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts.
Litany of Humility.
O Jesus, meek and humble of heart,
hear me. From the desire of being esteemed,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being loved,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being extolled,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being honored,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being praised,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being preferred to others,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being consulted,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being approved,
deliver me, Jesus. From the fear of being humiliated,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being despised,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of suffering rebukes,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being calumniated,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being forgotten,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being ridiculed,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being wronged,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being suspected,
deliver me, Jesus. That others may be loved more than I,
that others may be esteemed more than I,
that in the opinion of the world, others may increase and I may decrease,
that others may be chosen and I set aside,
that others may be praised and I unnoticed,
that others may be preferred to me in everything,
that others may become holier than I, provided that I become as holy as I should.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
Amen.
Hello, my name is Deacon Omar Gutierrez, and I want to ask you to support Discerning Hearts in a special way. We, Chris McGregor, the board, and I all know that not everyone listening can help financially. We know we have listeners from all parts of the world, and we have made a commitment since the beginning to make the truths shared through Discerning Hearts totally free. So while you may not be able to contribute financially, what you can do is certainly pray, but also give us positive reviews on whatever platform you use to listen to us. If it's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, however it is that you get these podcasts, or if you're on YouTube and you like our videos, please give us a good rating and write a review. The more good ratings and reviews we get, the higher our profile, and the more listeners will discover us, listeners who may have the means to contribute in the future. Please consider rating us and writing a positive review today.
We now return to our conversation with Deacon James Keating. I think we can fall into traps because we are searching for Jesus, that encounter. And as all the great mystics have said, it all begins within. He can be found within you. But as someone who is starting out, they may seem to see him in the guise of another person. Maybe it's this particular popular teacher right now, or that particular popular teacher, or this person. And they will surrender so much of that intimacy that they have that is waiting for within to follow that popular teacher. I'm not trying to be oversimplistic about the subject, but do you know where I'm trying to break open here?
It's always been that way. It's always been, you know, I follow Apollo, right? Remember from Paul's writings? We've always had the temptation to some type of hero worship because God is spirit. And so when someone embodies the truths of God in their words, it's very easy for us to want to latch on to the person who's uttering those words in the flesh, because God himself cannot be seen. It's a tricky thing. So some type of messiahism and the messiah complex from the one who's doing the teaching. I'm necessary, I'm needed. It's like, no, you're not. I think God can raise up a new teacher from these stones right here. You could probably stop teaching. Keating could stop babbling and writing, and he could go clean toilets, and God would be happy, and Keating would be happy, and the world would be happy. Because it's God's power that makes a teacher effective. It's not that person himself or herself. And so there's a clinging that the audience, the class, the retreatants do in a messianic way to somebody that can be unhealthy. And that's why you never want to be with a teacher who demands some type of affiliation with himself or herself. Mm-hmm. You always want to be with a teacher who's sick of himself, sick of herself, and keeps pushing you to Jesus. That's a good sign that you're with a good teacher, is that he has nothing to sell and he doesn't want you to come back next week so that he can keep his gig going. He just wants you to go away and be with Jesus. Good analogy of this would be spiritual directors. One of the most beautiful principles of spiritual direction is that, you know, somebody calls you and says, would you be my spiritual director? And you say something like, well, let's meet and talk and see if I can help you and see if we're a good fit. And they see that they're a good fit. And the spiritual director says, well, if you want to call me again or come see me, feel free. And the great beauty of it is the spiritual director never calls that directee, ever. If they drift away, they drift away. If they call, they call. He or she never calls them or emails them or says, hey, where you been or how you doing or what's up? It's all so freeing that because the search is for God, it's not for a guru. And if you have a guru, they're always wanting you to be around them. Hey, you missed your meeting. Hey, you should go on retreat with me. Hey, I'm giving this presentation. These are people who are trying to keep you attached to them. But in fact, they're supposed to be just trying to keep you attached to Jesus. And I think that's a good sign that you're with a good teacher. This is too extreme, but to some extent, you're with a good teacher when they could care less whether you think whether you think they're a good teacher or not. Mm-hmm. The only thing that models a good teacher would be that when they're done teaching, you're with Jesus. This is very much like the homily at Mass. A good homily at Mass always leaves you in prayer. When the homilist is done, you should be praying. So much so, if we take it to the extreme, you'd forget that a homily was just given because you'd been taken so deeply into prayer with God that all you were thinking about was God, you and God, you and God. As opposed to what happens so many times in our culture, that was a good homily, like that was a good speech, or he's a good rhetorician and his speaking skills are so powerful. And all you're doing is focusing on the cleric. Mm-hmm. And so the right movement is in discernment. Does this spiritual director leave me free to be with God? Does this homilist take me into prayer? Does this teacher bind me to the Trinity and not to the books and products and classes he's trying to sell? That's our standard.
Mm. All the names that you mentioned earlier, they exude that. You can tell because that's the hallmark of humility. They never say, I'm humble. This may seem silly, but it's almost you can smell false humility.
Mm-hmm.
It's so obvious to the eye that there's an act going on. And what's so tragic about it is that the person who is a part of that behavior, they don't see it, do they?
There's a healing that's needed. There's some type of unhealed neediness going on that the majority of human beings have if they don't stay in the place to receive the love of the Trinity as a suffering. If they keep moving around, they're going to stay needy. They're going to want the followers. They're going to want the applause. They're going to want the next hit because they're not staying long enough and deep enough in the suffering of receptivity of God's love. And so, like you said, there are some teachers. So, for example, I mentioned Father Donald Haggerty. If I just read one of his books, like The Contemplative Hunger, I just read that book and then I picked it up and read it again in another month and read it again in another month, I could be a saint. Mm-hmm. If I did that with von Balthasar's book on prayer, or David Fagerberg's series, he's about three books on the liturgy, on what mysticism is in the liturgy. If I had one good Ratzinger book on my shelf and could read it in a contemplative, prayerful way, I could become a saint from those books. Because of what these men have suffered in the reception of Holy Communion. So you don't need to go flitting around all over the place. You need to simply settle and rest where the greatest percentage of true nutrition is being given to the soul. And that's why I'm saying there's just too many voices today. Now, of course, the technology that we're talking on today is part of the cause of this proliferation of voices. I could set up my own platform on this device called a computer, and I could do a blog, or I could do a podcast. I could, you know, just keep talking and maybe get a few hundred followers, and maybe I'd become dependent on making sure those few hundred followers are still my followers. But the whole thing, it seems artificial, because it's coming from some type of perhaps ego need, and it's not coming from the only thing that really needs to gather the masses. And the only thing that really needs to gather the masses is the Eucharist. And you notice that the only thing that really needs to gather the masses doesn't draw attention to itself even. The best priests just celebrate Mass, and it's over. It's done. It's not about lingering about trying to get attraction to themselves. The whole thing is almost too humble to use. Some men try, and of course they look like buffoons when they try to use the platform of the Eucharist for their own egos. And like you said, people can see that, and they avoid those kind of priests, and they're basically very lonely, except for other people who are unhealed, maybe go after them. But the Mass is too pure to be used in that way. But it's the only thing that should draw the masses. Everyone else should be, you should maybe come to Fulton Sheen, let's say, for an hour, but Fulton Sheen should be pushing you always to the Mass. Or Bishop Barron for an hour, but Bishop Barron pushing you to the Mass, never pushing you to himself, never pushing you to his products, but to the Mass, to the Mass. And of course, the beautiful thing is that if you forget who pushed you to the Mass, it doesn't matter, because that was the goal of that person's life to begin with. So I imagine, like, if Father Haggerty never publishes another book, he could care less, because his goal was simply to facilitate the holiness of people. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are those spiritual writers, as you mentioned. I'm also thinking of someone like a Catherine de Hewitt Doherty, mm-hmm. Baroness, and Carol Hauslander.
Yeah. Yeah.
Relatively hidden lives, though. I mean, like Catherine Doherty, there's something, she was a speaker, but then she got busy with the work of caring for others. And, you know, and even in her writings, it was her spouse, Eddie Doherty, who ended up putting to paper much of what she was communicating outwardly, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that brings a certain type of peace to the soul when you're reading those. It's like, oh, you know, and there's a weight to it, a sacredness. It's quite lovely. Not on the same par, of course, not with sacred scripture, but it's that communion, isn't it? It's like
it's like cooking, you know. You walk in the house and you smell a good meal. It's not the meal, but you're smelling it. And that's mm-hmm. it's like these writers. It's like that, well, this isn't the meal, but it sure smells good. And they're leading you to the source of the scent, to the aroma, which is the Eucharist. And that's why you rest, and that's why you feel peaceful with them. As you're reading the best of the best, you know, you're reading something from St. Bonaventure, not necessarily his heavy philosophical writings, but some of his mystical writings on, you know, the soul's journey into God, for example. Mm. There's an aroma there. And the aroma is coming from his own suffering and receptivity of the love of God that has a Eucharistic origin. And so he's pointing you right back to the source that actually gave him the insight and wisdom to write such a book. So yeah, less trivia, and more sacramental food. What the church maybe lacks today is just an enjoyment of a sacramental imagination. Because it's, you know, the sacramental imagination has been pushed out by the political imagination and the economic imagination. We're recording this during the virus, the coronavirus, and people are remarking all over the world, that for those who have not suffered the coming of the virus themselves and they remain healthy, they talk about how their lives have become simpler. And invariably, when you listen to their description of simplicity, it's always about, they mean spending more time in the midst of relationships. Yeah, that's it. Not an economic imagination, not a political imagination, not an entertainment imagination, but the imagination that flows from the sacramental life. And the whole sacramental life is about communion with persons. That's true simplicity. And that's one of the gifts that people are praying does not leave when the virus leaves.
Mm. We'll continue our conversation in our next episode. You've been listening to a special conversation entitled Prayer in This Present Moment with Deacon James Keating. To hear and or to download this conversation along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for more from Deacon James Keating.